Tennessee football fans have had this one circled on the calendar. The Sun Devils host the Trojans Saturday night in Tempe for a 7:30 kickoff. Hear pregame, play-by-play, and postgame on 98.7 and the Arizona Sports app.
Yeah, maybe circled on the calendar for the reasons of, oh my God, everybody duck. Take cover. The big bad Trojans are coming to town. We'll see if ASU can compete coming up in just over 48 hours. Speaking of ASU, we're going to talk some Sun Devil football with Chris Cartman, the great Chris Cartman, Sun Devil source, coming up at 1:15. The 49ers and the Giants tonight, Howard, in the Bay. The Giants not only without Saquon Barkley, the entire left side of their offensive line is going to miss that football game. Andrew Thomas, some thought they were holding him out against the Cardinals to make sure he was okay to play in this Thursday night game against the 49ers. Not the case. The hamstring is still keeping the left tackle out. Also, big news in Dallas, and it is not good for the Cowboys. Trayvon Diggs, their great cornerback, injured today in practice, a knee injury seen by Cowboys media, leaving the facility on crutches. Ian Rappaport, NFL Network, reporting that he is heading for an MRI on that injured knee. So, don't know the status. That's all we know. Once again, Trayvon Diggs, knee injury today in practice, left the facility on crutches. MRI coming up. Obviously, if Diggs can't go, the Cowboys defense is still loaded, but you're talking about one of the best cornerbacks in the National Football League, Howard. That would not be a good thing for Mike McCarthy and the Cowboys.
No, definitely. And a playmaker, and just does so many things for that team. And, you know, they've built up some pretty good depth there, obviously, and we always, you know how I love the mantra, next man up. Well,
you and BA? Yep.
Well, there's reason guys are starters, and then there's reasons the guys are backups, and that doesn't mean that someone getting their opportunity can't step up and do well, but a lot of times that doesn't happen, and that affects teams. There's absolutely no question about it. And this league is a war of attrition, and who is able to navigate through that without too much usually are the teams, you know, that do well. I mean, you know, the Eagles with Jonathan Gannon, remember he mentioned something to me, and we were talking, this is way back several months ago, and was talking about how the Eagles' offensive line and how they avoided injury. And he said to me, do you realize that the starting lineup for us on offense and defense in week one was the same starting lineup that they had in the Super Bowl? I mean, that's almost unheard of. And so
they had great luck injury-wise.
Yeah, tremendous.
And not that that's the excuse for Cliff Kingsbury's final year, but compared to that, to the Cardinals' offensive line alone last year. All right, speaking of the quarterback situation injury-wise for the Cardinals. Now, Josh Dobbs is going to start again, obviously. He's going to make his fifth NFL start on Sunday against the Cowboys. Cardinal fans, and even us in the media, we await for any news on the potential return of Kyler Murray. The team has been tight-lipped about it, but as Howard and I talked about earlier in the show, they just don't know. I think that's the reason for it. I don't think it's gamesmanship. I don't think they're trying to hide something from the public. I just think at this point, given the knee and the mental and physical recovery for Kyler Murray, I don't think they know yet here in almost late September when Kyler Murray is going to come back. What's disappointing, if that's even the word, I would have thought back in the summer or spring, by the time we got to September 21st, we would have a better handle on when Kyler Murray would be back on the field. We don't. We still presume it'll be sometime around week 7 or 8. He's on the PUP. Then he can come back and practice. Then he could potentially play in a game, obviously. So any Kyler Murray news is big news, and we're going to gobble it up and dissect it and decipher it. So Kyler goes on TikTok, and he writes a caption as he's working out. I tore my ACL 8 months ago. This is the only major injury I've had. I've never missed the game like this. I'm itching to get back. You learn a lot about yourself in these types of moments. To those of you who ride with me, support me, speak up for me, I appreciate you more than you'll ever know. I won't let us down. Period. Soon. Period. Soon. Period. Obviously meaning that we all believe that he means he will be back on the field soon. Soon, of course, is tough to quantify, Howard. He's obviously technically able to play week 5. that to me...
Unrealistic.
You've talked about this for a long time. Once he comes off PUP, then he can start practicing in full. The question is, once he starts practicing in full, then when can he be back on the football field? Are we talking 2 weeks, 3 weeks? That's what we're going to find out. And even if he's off the PUP, that doesn't mean he's ready to start practicing in full. So well, there's so many moving parts here still. The next step is obviously to come off a PUP, but then we'll see.
Well, when he comes off the PUP, that's the time when you have to say that he's ready to practice. Now, full is different because he's not going to take all the offensive snaps in practice until you know that that's going to be the week you're getting him ready to play, because you still have to have your starter take snaps with the first unit in practice. Now, could he do scout team or whatever? Yeah, you could, but what's the point in doing that? But I think when he comes off the PUP, he will start practicing to whatever level it is and being able to run the offense. And it's good that Dobbs knows it and he's getting better at it. So if he misses a few snaps during the week, it's not going to hurt him badly. I think it's going to happen pretty soon after the 4 weeks is up. I don't know if it's going to be in that first week, because the other part of it is this, Tim. Once you are, quote, the term for in the NFL is designated for return, you can practice for 21 days. And then a decision has to be made. It can't be like you can just practice for the rest of the season and a team can decide at any time whether to put them on the roster. You have 21 days.
Okay.
So 3 weeks, Bob, obviously, to make that decision. So you've got to get any guy coming off that list, you've got to be able to give him enough reps to really see where he is. And you've seen guys come back from that list and practice for 3 weeks, and then they say, nope, he's not going to be ready, and then they stay on PUP for the rest of the season. I don't think that's going to happen here. He's obviously sending messages that, hey, I'm going to be ready. I'm ready. I don't know if he's saying that behind the scenes. I'd be surprised if he's not saying it. But that's why I think it's going to happen pretty quickly after the 4 weeks is up. And it might even be that first week. And then you have those 3 weeks to truly evaluate.
Arizona Sports. Breaking news.
Uh-oh.
All right, so Tim kind of mentioned it, but Adam Schefter just now tweeted out that the Cowboys believe that Trayvon Diggs suffered a torn ACL.
Oh my goodness.
During practice today, and he will undergo an MRI to confirm the injury per source. So, looks like they will not have him, obviously, against the Cardinals on Sunday.
Well, that's a true...
Look at the season, Tim. I mean, look what's happened already.
And in practice, too.
And in practice also, but with, you know, with Nick Chubb and with J.K. Dobbins of the Ravens and key players going down with injuries. Unfortunately, it's the nature of the sport and the nature of the game, but it's just crushing for players and for teams when it happens, especially when they happen to some of your best players.
And a guy like Diggs, I mean... They're still going to be a good football team. They're still going to be a playoff team. But an injury like that could be the difference between are you going to win the Super Bowl or not. That's that kind of injury. Because you're talking about not only one of the best cornerbacks in the league, you're talking about a guy who separates your team from other teams from a playmaking standpoint. I mean, I don't want to say a crushing blow, because, again, they're going to win a lot of games, probably going to make the playoffs. But that could be ultimately a crushing blow in terms of are you good enough to beat the Eagles and the 49ers when it counts in January. Arizona Sports, Redbird Farms, Chicken, and Coca-Cola are teaming up to bring you an exclusive limited edition State 48 Dawn of a New Era t-shirt. Be among the first 50 fans to join us today at the Albertsons at Desert Ridge Marketplace between 4 and 6 p.m. and claim your first free shirt with proof of purchase on any Redbird Farms or Coca-Cola products. Just head to the contest page on ArizonaSports.com for complete details. We're taking a break after the timeout. We're going to talk some ASU football. What a challenge for the Devils this week as Caleb Williams and the Trojans pay a visit to Tempe. We'll talk to Chris Carpenter about that coming up live. It's Tim and Howard in for Wolf and Luke, Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, it's Vince Marotta. Coming up on Football Friday, the Arizona State Sun Devils have their last ever Pac-12 opener. We'll get into that and preview the D-backs' big series in New York against the Yankees. It's Bickley and Marotta mornings, 6 a.m. here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Tim Ray Howard Balls are back. It's 1:18 here on a Thursday, getting ready for the weekend. Some football games in town, and they're not expected to be all that close. Howard Balzer, we talked about the point spread in the Cardinals game, 12.5 point underdogs, and that is nothing compared to ASU that finds themselves as many as 35 point underdogs to USC and Caleb Williams. It's there's not Sun Devil Stadium, Mountain America Stadium on Saturday night. Jesse, real quick, Kenny Dillingham from the other day, do we have that?
Care if I'm playing Michael Jordan in basketball. I'm not playing him to lose. Otherwise, why would I play? I'm not just going to play because it's fun. No, what's fun is competing to win. So you're playing to win. That's it. And if you don't, whatever happens after the game, it doesn't matter. You then watch the tape and you get better and you grow and you get better and you grow and get better. And eventually, right, Saturday nights are going to feel better. But if you don't take the field and you expect to win the football game, something's wrong. You should expect to win. You should. That's otherwise, you shouldn't be on the field.
That's Sun Devil coach Kenny Dillingham. You could probably hear it in his voice if you could actually see that interview. Kenny's a young head coach, and boy, Howard Balzer, it seems like he's going through it right now. I mean, back-to-back losses, a roster that's been decimated by injuries, uncertainty in the quarterback position because of injuries and inconsistent play by the guys when they are out there, and then obviously a real tough opponent coming into Tempe on Saturday night. To talk about it, Sun Devil Source editor Chris Cartman. Chris, good to be with you. You know, Chris, you hear, I know you were out there when Kenny gave that press conference. That's just a one snippet of it. But when you see Kenny's demeanor, now listen, he's always energetic and excitable. That's kind of the way he is as a young coach. But I'm starting to see a young coach who might be a little stressed out. Am I picking up some stuff that you are as well, or no? Where are you seeing Kenny's demeanor at right now?
Yeah, it's important contextually to make clear that he ran over after talking to his team in a very impassioned way. Okay. 30 seconds before a lot of those comments were made. And it's understandable that when a team is 35-point underdog, hasn't been able to do anything really successfully offensively in a full game, and oftentimes for six quarters in a row, scoreless, that can create doubt, seeds of doubt, and maybe even a going through the motion sort of situation. But Dillingham was really pushing guys hard, not in a bad way, but he was all over the field, running behind receivers, demonstrating what guys should be seeing in terms of routes. And he's taken on a lot more of a hands-on approach with the offense this week because he's going to be calling plays. That was observed from the outset of their first practice open to the media on Tuesday. So I just think a lot of what you're seeing in the media comments is a spillover from the passion that he's trying to convey and that he feels to his players and what he would like to get out of them. I don't necessarily see that as stress.
Okay.
I think he realizes pretty clearly that ASU is in a bad situation and he's going to be the coach for several years. Like, he's not, this isn't like a 1-year trial and then you pull the ripcord at ASU. It's not like these blue blood places around the country where you can afford to do that and people will be clamoring for that. So much more to me on the side of his passion, his enthusiasm, and trying to push guys to match him in that regard.
Chris, you were the first person to report it on Twitter that you noticed Kenny was taking over the play calling in practice after that practice earlier in the week. He said he probably would do it on game day Saturday. I just heard you mention that he will be doing it. Your thoughts on that, why it happened, why it's important to happen, and what do you think it may mean for the team in real time on Saturday night with Dillingham calling the plays and taking over that responsibility?
Yeah, just to be clear, I can't report for sure that okay. He's going to be, but I am 99% confident based upon everything that we've seen and just my experience covering college football. You're not going to take over the play calling duties all week and then not do it on Saturday. So I'm sure that it will be him. That's why I say that. You're not going to probably get dramatically different concepts into your play sheet as you otherwise would have. You're still going to build in a lot of the same things for USC's defense, which is a cover four defense and that plays also man coverages. You can complete a lot of passes at a high rate against this type of a defense, but they're going to be shorter passes. Drew Pine was very successful in that fashion playing for Notre Dame against USC last year. He completed 23 of 26 passes, extremely high rate for over 300 yards and three touchdowns, but he had the advantage of tremendous offensive line protection and tight ends that were really great and a strong run game that all sort of together allowed for him to have a lot more time and a lot more success. That doesn't happen in this situation with ASU's injuries up front and their overall challenges on the offensive side of the ball. They're going to have to get it out very quickly, and I mean 3 seconds. There should be alarms going off if the ball isn't out by the 4th second, because that is going to dramatically increase the rate of pressure, sacks, turnovers, jeopardy throws. So just watch very carefully. ASU needs to complete a high percentage of short passes, get first downs, keep the chains moving, try to keep USC's potent offense off the field as much as possible. Tall task, but there are some things that can work against this defense.
One thing I was curious about, Chris, because I'm curious what you think is going to happen at the quarterback position Saturday night, but I just want to go back quickly to Dillingham's comments there that we were referencing. What, was there a question directed at him that kind of launched him into that, or did he just like kind of just go into saying it? Seems like there must have been something that set him to say it the way he did.
Yeah, there was a back and forth, a few questions, and that was very much the theme of the press conference. He called back to his time under Mike Norvell. People will remember former ASU offensive coordinator that Dillingham worked as a GA under 2014-2015. Gone on to be a very successful head coach now, Florida State, their top five team or whatever they are in the country. But their first 2 years were very unsuccessful. I think they didn't play a full season in 2020, but they had they lost twice as many games as they won or something, and then they were 5-7, I think, the next year. And so his analogy that he's continued to say is, and this is like growing bamboo where you have to water the heck out of it for 3 or 4 years and nothing happens, and then all of a sudden it sprouts and grows however many feet in like a matter of weeks or months. And so he's just trying to alert people, I've been through this, we're going to be fine, but you have to put in the work every single day, even if you aren't getting the results that you want on Saturdays. Saturdays are simply another day in the overall process of trying to get better. And if you're not getting better Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, et cetera, you have no chance on Saturdays. But he's saying, we're going to be fine. I've already seen this happen. It's the same offense, same type of culture that you're trying to build. And he's reassuring his players, just trust me, if you stay bought in, we're going to be okay in the long run.
Chris, are your expectations that we see Pine or Conover at quarterback Saturday night?
Pine's going to start almost for sure. Okay. He, as I said, he already had success against this exact defense. He had a very bad game. I think that he probably was rusty. He's coming off a month of missed practices, and then nothing really prepares you for full speed until you get into that first game. Fresno State brought a ton of pressure at him to try to make him unsettled, and it worked successfully. I think he was rattled by all of that, the speed, the differences between not having the type of protections that you have at Notre Dame versus what's present at ASU. He's still not maybe 100% healthy, but he has that under his belt. I think that you go back, you watch the film, you say, okay, you got to get the ball out hot. You got to get the ball out faster. Got to make quicker decisions. Not to say that Conover is bad. I mean, he was a star quarterback at Chandler, 3 high school championships, right? But from everything that we've seen in practices all year, Pine was always very clearly ahead of Conover on the pecking order, so long as he was healthy, and he practiced in full this week.
All right, Chris Cartman, great job as always. Look forward to your coverage the rest of the week and, of course, on game night Saturday night as the Sun Devils tangle up with the Trojans. Thanks, Chris, man. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate you.
All right, you got it. Text us your thoughts to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now if you got thoughts on ASU and USC. If you think the Sun Devils can make it a game, can they win the game? Whew! That's a tough task, Howard Balzer. But could they make it a game? I guess we're going to find out. All right, we're taking a break. When we come back, talking some NFL football. A lot of 2-0 teams, surprisingly, in the NFC, even though the AFC has all those great quarterbacks. We'll talk about that. Plus, again, the latest on the crushy news coming out of Dallas in the last half hour or so. One of their best players out for the year. We'll talk about that coming up after the timeout. Tim and Howard in for Wolf and Luke, Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Cardinals host the Cowboys for a Week 3 matchup in Glendale. Pregame hits early Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. with Dave Pack, Ron Wolfley, and the kickoff Sunday afternoon at 1:25 on 98.7 and the Arizona Sports app.
All right, yeah, the Dallas Cowboys are coming to town on Sunday, but they are now officially coming to town shorthanded. Trayvon Diggs, their outstanding cornerback, arguably, if not their second-best player on that fantastic defense, certainly in the top three. Howard Balzer, it's now pretty much official. Reportedly, the ACL is torn in his knee. Happened at practice today. Clearly, his season is over in Dallas. We talked about what this means for the Cowboys in the short term, coming to Arizona on Sunday. This is still a football team that is loaded and stacked. They're going to win a lot of football games. But what does this mean for their Super Bowl chances? That's where, obviously, the questions start to rise. But Diggs, torn MCL today. MRI confirms that via reports from Adam Schefter and Ian Rappaport. Obviously, his season is over.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, in terms of what it means for the postseason, assuming they get there, it all depends on can someone step up at a high level. Stephon Gilmore, who's been around quite a long time, is their other starting corner. And then the guy who's listed as his backup is Jordan Lewis. I would suspect that he will move over to where Diggs is. The guy who's listed as his backup is a second-year player, Deron Bland. So it's all a matter of how they obviously how they play with without him. I mean, their pass rush is tremendous, you know, with DeMarcus Lawrence and Micah Parsons and those guys. Obviously, that helps the secondary. Of course, the secondary covering can help the pass rush too, obviously. And so I know Zach Ertz said today he talked to the media, Tim, at a Cardinals training facility. He says, I think I've played the Cowboys 19 times in my career. Obviously, all those years with the Eagles. He said, this is the fastest I've ever seen their defense. And now, of course, they don't have one of those fast guys in Diggs, who, before the season, signed a five-year, $97 million contract extension. And now, all they get at him for this season is two games.
And Diggs had been absolutely putting on a clinic at that position the first 2 weeks of the season. Zach Ertz would know, Howard. You know, he's played in 17 career games against the Cowboys, 77 career catches. No tight end in the history of the National Football League has caught more balls against the Dallas Cowboys than the Cardinals. Zach Ertz in his career with the Eagles and, of course, the Cardinals.
And by the way, a shout out to Zach's wife, Julie, who will play her final soccer game tonight for the team that she's with. It's in Cincinnati. So she hangs up her soccer shoes this one.
Tip of the cap to Julie Ertz. So Trayvon Diggs out for the year. Howard, real quick, we're 2 weeks into the season. You've lost one of the biggest stars in the game on the defensive side of the ball. And in Aaron Rodgers, you've lost one of the biggest stars in the game on the offensive side of the ball. So Rodgers and Diggs out for the season. I heard there were some reports that Rodgers might try to come back. Give me a break. Nick Chubb down for the year. J.K. Dobbins down for the year. Close to home, L.J. Collier and Carlos Watkins bicep surgeries for those two guys. I can't report this because I just don't know, but come on, conventional wisdom, probably down for the year. This is a part of the game, Howard, that we're finding out all too well, the realistic part of the NFL, that even through 2 weeks, injuries take their toll and impact how a team will finish. And we saw this last year, certainly with the Cardinals and the way they were decimated on the offensive line. That did not help the way this team muddled through the 2022 campaign. And now you're seeing the Jets take a blow with Aaron Rodgers. We'll see what kind of blow his digs turns out to be for the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, that's what this league is. It's how, if you have too many of them, it's going to affect you. But sometimes you can overcome them. And that speaks to a team's depth. It speaks to everyone else stepping up on whatever side of the ball it is. Sometimes you just get so many that it's just almost impossible. I mean, we saw the Rams last year, Tim, with how decimated they were on their offensive line. And then they lose Cooper Kupp. And here's a team that won the Super Bowl the season before and won five games. So that's the nature of this league, and you just don't know when they're going to come. You, as a coach, as a team, as fans, you hope it doesn't happen, but you know at some point it's going to happen to someone, and you just hope they don't, you know, pile up. And, you know, here already, I mean, the Cardinals played last Sunday's game without, including Buda Baker. The other guys weren't, quote, marquee names, but they were still four players on that defense that started in week one that weren't available in week two. And that's a lot of guys. And so, and what it also affects a lot of times is special teams, because it means someone else who's on special teams that might have been playing some snaps gets moved up to a starting position, so they play less on special teams, and someone else has to step in there. And that's that. You just have to deal with it. It's just life in the NFL.
And Thursday Night Football tonight, the Giants on the road in San Francisco, Santa Clara to be technically specific, correct? Giants are going to go without Saquon Barkley and the entire left side of their offensive line. Left tackle, left guard, out for the game. Andrew Thomas missed the Cardinals game with the hamstring. He's going to miss tonight's game with, of course, that same hamstring. Real quick, Howard, before we hit the break, I'm looking at the NFL standings. The AFC was considered the more dominant conference, and they still might be at the end of the day. Certainly the conference with the best quarterback contingent, no question about it. Probably more Super Bowl contenders in that conference. But after 2 weeks, there's two 2-0 teams in the AFC, and there's seven 2-0 teams in the NFC. Do you take anything from that, or is it too early for that kind of that kind of talk?
It's way too early. It's way too early, because obviously there's not a whole lot of difference between being 2-0 and 1-1. So, but I think it'll work out the way we think it will. And a lot depends on who you're playing as you open the season, and all those things tend to even out. But I was looking at the 0-2 teams, which of course the Cardinals find themselves among. And look at some of these other teams. I mean, look at Denver. I mean, the Broncos with Sean Payton, and he was talking this week about, hey, we've got to make our play calls shorter. What? You've been working on this offense since OTAs and training camp and two games, and now all of a sudden you're just realizing we've got to make the play calls shorter? They've been outscored 68-31 in their first two games. Of the 0-2 teams, at least, that are Denver, Houston, Carolina, Chicago, Cardinals might, I'm going to say might, if they can land, they might be better than those teams, but we'll see how it plays out over the coming weeks.
Probably not better than the Bengals and Chargers also sitting at
0. That's why I didn't mention them.
0-2, that's right. All right, Queens of the Stone Age just announced the End is Nero tour coming to Arizona Financial Theater on December 5. Tickets go on sale tomorrow at 10 a.m., and you can win a pair of tickets right now by visiting the contest page on arizonasports.com. In the meantime, going to finish up today with some D-backs baseball. Day off today, but a big series begins tomorrow in the Bronx, and as we know at this point of the season, they're all big series. The latest begins tomorrow in New York City. We'll talk about that, plus Corbin Carroll. Does he have any competition for National League Rookie of the Year? That answer coming up after the timeout as well. Tim and Howard in for Wolf and Luke, Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Cardinals fans, this is your night. The Big Red Rage, coming up tonight at 6 on the home of Arizona Cardinals football, 98.7 in the Arizona Sports app.
All right, Tim Ring, Howard Balzer in for Wolf and Luke. It's been a good day here on the midday show. Burns and Gambo ready to roll 2 o'clock. Much more, of course, on the Trayvon Diggs injury and a big weekend ahead for not only the Cardinals, but the Sun Devils as well, as they welcome in Caleb Williams and the USC Trojans into Mountain America Stadium. But of course, really, the front page news this time in late September doesn't happen all that often, but the Arizona Diamondbacks certainly have their place at the table right now. D-backs 81-72 on the season. They have won 5 games in a row after sweeping the Cubs and the Giants. Day off today. They begin a series in New York tomorrow. A 3-game set against the New York Yankees. Yankees are a 500 team this year. They are quite mediocre. They have not played well in the second half at all. But Howard, you and I were talking about it earlier in the show. There's an aura. There's something about going to Yankee Stadium. D-backs are a young team. Don't get caught watching the pinstripes, as they said in the movie. Go in there and play your game and try to get out of there with at least a couple of wins to try to keep themselves in position to make the postseason. Currently 2.5 back of the Phillies. Phillies play the Mets tonight. The Cubs are reeling. They've lost 9 out of 12. Boy, the D-backs sent the Cubs into a tailspin that you cannot believe, and the Cubs have yet to get out of it as they've dropped 9 of 12. So the Cubs host the Pirates at Wrigley at 4:40. So that's kind of setting the table. The Marlins are off. The Giants are all but done. Not only are they, 3 back now of the final wild card spot, they have 10 games left. 7 of them are against the Dodgers. And I know the Dodgers have nothing to play for, and they might be setting up their rotations and resting guys, so we'll see. But the Giants are in a whole world of hurt right now. So, Howard, that is setting the D-backs table. They have put themselves in a fantastic position with 9 to play to end up earning a wild card spot and making the postseason for the first time since 2017.
Yeah. First, don't you think the Dodgers would love to just totally eliminate
the Giants?
The Giants?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, I would think so. I would think so. But they, like you said, they're not playing for anything. But yeah, I mean, it's all a matter. We say it. It sounds cliched at times, but just go out there and play the game loose. Play it the way you know how it can be played. And with everything that is going on with this team, key hits, relief pitching has just been unbelievable. And so, again, just keep doing what you're doing. And it's easy to say, I realize, but that's essentially what they have in front of them now. And so,
I think it's critical to stack wins in New York, in Chicago, because I'm telling you right now, the Astros are really good, and they may have a whole heck of a lot to play for in that final series coming up next weekend at Chase Field. Talked to Torrey Lovello on the Burns and Gambo show last week. He's trying to set it up where Gallen and Kelly pitch on Friday and Saturday. Not sure which order, but those two guys go in games 1 and games 2 against the Astros in that final series of the season. Quickly, Howard, before we get out of here, Corbin Carroll, I think he's got the Rookie of the Year wrapped up. In fact, I know he does. It's interesting. A story on the Ringer. They give their kind of odds for postseason awards. For the AL Rookie of the Year, for comparison, the favorite, Gunnar Henderson, Orioles infielder. The contenders, Tristan Casas, Red Sox. Masataka Yoshida, Red Sox left fielder. The dark horse, Cole Reagans, Royals starting pitcher. NL Rookie of the Year, the favorite, Corbin Carroll, Diamondbacks outfielder. The contenders, none.
None.
The dark horses, none.
Well, I was looking at some odds on this, and those are sometimes, they're crazy because the odds are they're driven by who bets. And a lot of times they change because someone will bet on a long shot just thinking, hey, if that comes in, that looks pretty good. But Corbin Carroll is minus forever in terms of the odds. And then after that, everybody is plus. And so it's hard to imagine that anyone else even gets votes. I mean, he probably should be a unanimous choice for this award. We won't find that out for a couple months, but it should be that way. But he's not even thinking about that. I mean, I know he was interviewed about it. He said, hey, some of that stuff is stuff to look at later down the road. He just wants to be part of a winning team. And he's obviously been a huge part. And he is. And he is part of a winning team. But certainly getting into the postseason, I think most would agree, would kind of advances a little bit expectations. Everyone saw this team improving and improving. I don't know if anybody really thought realistically they could be a playoff team when this season started. But here they are, and they have it in front of them, and they control their own destiny.
Corbin Carroll, obviously an all-star game starter in Seattle midseason. First rookie in Major League Baseball history. I mean, when you start throwing out any kind of stat that begins with that phrase, first rookie in Major League Baseball history to steal 50 bases and hit 25 home runs. Nobody's ever done that before. So, yeah, runaway winner for National League Rookie of the Year. Corbin Carroll enters the weekend hitting 286 on the year. And remember, he hit a wall. He kind of coincided with the D-backs themselves hitting a wall in early August. But much like the team has responded, so has Corbin Carroll. All right, for Howard Balzer, I'm Tim Ring. Jesse Jim Morrison behind the glass. Appreciate you hanging today. Wolf and Luke are back in the saddle tomorrow. For now, Burns and Gambo coming up after the break. Much more on the Cardinals and Cowboys, Trojans and Sun Devils, D-backs and Yankees, and of course the big news out of Dallas, Trayvon Diggs out for the year with a torn ACL. How will that impact the Cowboys going forward? See ya!